In this episode of Cielo Movies, it's a veritable world tour as the boys head around the globe. First, it's off to Tokyo, where the boys head back in time to check out the 1993 martial arts superheroine movie, The Heroic Trio. From there, we're back in the USA, where we head to New York City to see how the bike messengers operate in Premium Rush. Finally, we're off to jolly old England to review the trailer for the much-anticipated bomb film, Skyfall, not to be confused with that piece of crap Skyline. All this and news about the upcoming film adaptation of the Metal Gear Solid game, more RoboCop stuff, and how you might be able to catch the Avengers on the big screen if you missed it the first time around. All this and more on the 120th reel of COO Movies. Suck it, douchebag!
I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I love the smell of red cum in the morning.
Go ahead. Make my day.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
May the force be with you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand spanking new reel of CLO Movies. My name is Jeff, and I would like to introduce my worldly clone host, Ray and
clone host.
Okay, I'm actually moderating myself today, so maybe that's because I'm just hearing myself.
We were just laughing. Clone host or clone host? That's funny.
Hosts. So I've been having allergies. Maybe I can blame it on my allergies.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Anyways.
Hi, everybody.
We're back. We're bad. And this darn synergy is working right. Let's go to the news.
News on the mark!
Moving forward at Columbia Pictures.
Yeah, I don't see how this can be a good thing.
You just make me laugh so much because Jeff had this exciting intro and you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
about this.
What I did find interesting was the quote in the article from I believe it's from Hideo Kojima, who said, comic books are now the biggest genre in cinema. Video games are the comic books of today. I don't know if I agree with that. I think comic books are the comic books of today.
Yeah.
Before easing Metal Gear fans' minds by reassuring, we will take our time and tell the story with all the nuances, ideology, cautionary tales needed. God help us all if that's true, because I don't know if any of you have either ever played any of the Metal Gear Solid movies or Metal Gear Solid games. Well, the thing about it is the last Metal Gear Solid game had like 3 hours of cutscenes in it. Like, you could watch it as a movie pretty much and not do anything and play as a game. So I hope that they don't try to fit all of that story and stuff into a movie, because I will be in the back. Yeah, I've liked the old Metal Gear Solid games, like the really old ones, like the first one, and I liked, well, before it was Solid, it was just Metal Gear, and then I liked the original Metal Gear Solid. That was kind of fun and new and exciting, and now I can't be bothered with them, so. But I know there's a lot of fans out there, so maybe somebody will be happy. What about you guys? Are either you guys fans or familiar with Metal Gear?
Let's see. Has there been any really good video game movie yet?
Jeff's just waiting for WoW.
The WoW
movie by Blizzard. That's what he's just hoping for. But no,
it would literally be from Blizzard. It would be directed by Chris Metzen, and it was done by the cinematics team. But considering it takes about 2 years just to do a 4 or 5 minute cinematic for like this, that might be too wild. So yeah. I don't think they would do that. They would have to go with something else. But if they could do like a DreamWorks picture, I really would love it animated at least. Getting with DreamWorks, probably not Pixar, because I don't think Disney would want to pick World of Warcraft up, but. DreamWorks. I would love to see DreamWorks to do it. guys who made How to Train Your Dragon to World of Warcraft.
How to Train Your Dragon? Is that what you
said? Is that a Freudian slip?
But I'm thinking. Sorry.
I'm going to stop moderating. Trying to make sure that the sound is right and I can't speak. Anyways. Uh-huh. Okay. Now I switched headphones. I'm not moderating anymore.
Okay.
Anyways.
That was funny, though. I'm sorry. That was funny, funny.
It was funny. Unintentionally funny.
But funny. I'll go with it.
Yeah, the video game movie thing, just to wrap it up, yeah, there's been very few what I would consider good video game movies. I did enjoy the first Mortal Kombat movie. I don't know if I would still enjoy it if I watched it again, but at the time I enjoyed it. And I have liked a couple of the Resident Evil movies.
But I think that was more because it was fun, not because it was good.
Well, good, fun. I use those interchangeably. You know,
but you felt like you were watching the video game, do you know, like, or getting more from the video game. It was enhancing the video game experience, you know, whereas Doom was awful, you know, whereas, you know, there's been plenty that have been kind of bad. I was not a fan of Lara Croft of the Tomb Raider movie.
Yeah, that was that was a date movie for me, too.
I haven't brought that up in a long time.
I'm looking through the list of video games turned to movies, and let's see. We've got such classics like Super Mario Brothers, which is 13% on Rotten Tomatoes. Double Dragon, which is 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, really? I didn't think it was that bad. It was terrible, but still.
Street Fighter, 13%.
That deserves lower.
Mortal Kombat, which we enjoyed, is 34%, which is one of the higher ones, actually. Let's see. What's higher than Mortal Kombat? Resident Evil is tied with 34%. DOA Dead or Alive is 34%. I've never seen that. That looked horrible. Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within, the animated movie, that's 43%. And yeah, I think that's the highest one on the list.
Very culty. Classic movie, yeah. Dead Space has had a couple of animated movies made about it.
Yeah, I like the prequel Dead Space animated film. That was kind of cool.
Dead Space, and they did Deadfall, which came out not too long ago, and Deadfall is kind of interesting too.
And also, compared to most of those other movies you had, those were animated movies. They weren't live actions.
Right.
So I think really these end up being better in animation than they are in live action.
Do you have any theory as to why that is? I do. I think it's because, especially when you're doing hand-drawn animation, like the Dead Space movies were mostly hand-drawn, it's so prohibitively expensive to make those that you do not want to screw it up. Like, you don't really do anything without it being approved five ways to Sunday.
I can see that.
It used to be prohibitively. It used to be a lot more expensive to do computer animation, but not so much anymore. So I think that's sort of slipping. But yeah, I think a lot of hand-drawn animation movies like that. I think they get sort of, I don't know, they have a leg up, I think, just by the amount of money they cost. Not that if you have a ton of money to throw at a movie, it makes it good, because we know that doesn't happen.
Right.
What was the last one that we watched? The one that was Brad Bird's movie. God, I can't even remember it. On Mars. John Carter.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But anyway.
True.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've got Metal Gear Solid coming. Fun times.
Woohoo.
May end up on our list. Who knows?
Yeah.
So. What's next?
Moving on.
More RoboCop. Woohoo.
Yeah, well, I sort of did a follow-up, because last time we talked about the fact that Hugh Laurie had dropped out, and we were thinking of who was they naming as his replacement now? It just totally fell out of my head. Well, anyway, right now, I guess, of all people, nobody that I would have ever expected to see as a replacement.
Nope.
Michael Keaton. Yes, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Keaton. What's the last thing you saw Michael Keaton in was 2010. He played the police captain in the Other Guys with Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg. And he voiced Ken in Toy Story 3. So we haven't seen him in quite a while. So
He's been very successful. So I think he's another one that really need to do much.
And Batman.
It's going to be interesting to see him as a bad guy, though. Like, a straight-up bad guy. Like, have we seen him as a straight-up evil bad guy before? I don't think so. Maybe a dick, but not a bad guy. You know what I mean?
I'm trying to look through his movies.
Yeah, I can't think of anything. But it's just a follow-up, and then, which leads me into the next item, which cracked me up. I posted this on the on our Facebook page. Basically, the guy that's directing RoboCop, Jose Padilla, his friend has been quoted as saying he's been talking to him and that he said it's the worst experience. For every 10 ideas he has, 9 are cut. Whatever he wants, he has to fight. There is hell here, he told me. The film will be good, but I've never suffered so much and do not want to do it again. He is bitter, but it's a fighter. So I guess he's just fighting the studio on this one.
Huh.
You know, which I think is kind of interesting. There's been all sorts of weird and sort of bad press getting swirled around all of a sudden about this. I guess the script got leaked, or maybe a version of the script, which got ripped apart on Twitter. As the one guy, and I love this quote, I feel like one of those little potato people staring directly into the dark crystal, and yet I can't stop turning the pages.
The potato people staring at the dark crystal.
Now, spoiler alert here. Apparently, at some point in this script, RoboCop transforms. He transforms from social mode to combat mode, and there's... Yeah. 4 different versions of him in this. There's a RoboCop 1.0, which is basically looks just like the old RoboCop, which is looked at by a focus group, and they say it looks bad and outdated, so they switch him to RoboCop 2.0, which is, I guess, more updated and scary looking.
Okay.
And at some point, he changes to RoboCop 3.0, construction was outsourced to China and gets a test run attacking Al Qaeda training camp. And then RoboCop 4.0, which resembles a cop on steroids painted metallic blue, which he ends up being the Transformer version. Hopefully we've got some revisions in the works on that, because it's not sounding too hot.
That's a lot for, you know, a 2-hour movie. That's a lot of changing of the costume.
I know.
It may be 2 forms. You know, you have basically, you know, this social citizen mode where he's just kind of walking around doing his beat and such, and he's just like looking kind of like a normal guy. And then when he needs to get into battle, it's like armor mode.
Mm-hmm.
just armors up and his visor comes down. And kind of like if, in Lost in Space, when Matt Perry's character gets that thing comes over his head.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were like Robbie the Robot. I'm like, what?
No.
Okay. Danger. Danger. Danger.
Yeah, so...
Start spilling he might do that. It's like, danger.
Danger. Citizens, alert. Danger.
Under arrest.
Yeah, so we've had all sorts of interesting little script news pop up. I didn't put this on here, but if you get the chance, check out the Facebook page and watch the video that I attached about the summary of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles script, because it is both sad and hilarious all at the same time.
I'm too scared to watch it.
It's funny. It made me laugh. But yeah, just check that out. And then... last but certainly not least, in the vein of milking it for all it's worth, before The Avengers gets released on Blu-ray on September 25th, it's going back into the theaters. I didn't think it ever left the theaters, but I guess it's going back into more theaters for a special engagement from August 31st until September 6th. If you're one of the few people on this planet that has not seen The Avengers, you now have your chance to run to the theater and see it. So anybody think they're going to go to the big screen and watch it, or are we all just going to wait till it comes out on Blu-ray?
Yeah, I'm waiting.
Well, I don't have.
I've already seen it twice, so I'm ready for. I'm waiting for the Blu-ray.
Yeah, Blu-ray for me.
Netflix. No, that was just the Captain America.
And I don't know. I don't know where or what the details are, but somebody somewhere on this planet released the Blu-ray already, because I know there are people who physically have it. A couple people, but I haven't really asked them where they got it. But I can wait until the 25th. It's not that big of a deal. But if you want to do your sleuthing, it might be available now if you really, really want it.
Yeah, September 25th and the following days after, I'll be busy doing other things.
Yeah.
Such as Mrs. Pandaria.
What?
Oh, wow.
Mr. Pandaria comes out on the 25th, too.
He's going to be a panda. He's going to be a kung fu panda.
Oh, I'm so
here like... Windbrew, the bulging belly of good. The brewmaster of the wind.
Do you talk that way the whole time you're playing? Please tell me you do.
No, I don't. Only when I come to a boss and I have to announce that I'm here.
Evil doer. It is time to meet your fate. You will be defeated by me and my friends. I am the bulging belly of good, the brewmaster of the wind.
Why am I feeling I'm waiting for him to be like, get in my belly.
Was Jeff like in the movie we're about to talk about? Because
I don't know. It's,
I'm having these weird flashbacks with this movie.
He's so number
speaking
nine.
Of which, let's move into the past.
You're telling me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
The crappy recording trio, I mean the heroic trio, somehow got 88% fresh, 61% audience, directed by Johnny Toe, starring Michelle Yeoh, Anita Mui, and Maggie Chung. I'm so sorry, Michelle Yeoh.
Come on.
Well, you know what?
This was a big film for. This was a big film at the time.
Well, you know what? I'm going to jump in right here, though, because I know.
There is a sequel.
I'm going to answer one of Jeff's questions down here at the bottom in a little bit. We'll get to that finally. But I know you were wondering why Michelle Yeoh did this movie. If you look at her IMDb around this time, these were the kind of movies that she was doing.
Yeah, she was getting all these movies.
Yeah,
this was pre the good movies.
Well, this was the type of movie that was pretty, like, this was the hot shit in Hong Kong at the time.
These were superhero movies. Like, these are superhero movies, not typical American superhero movies.
Right.
You know,
this looks like the same type of recording as they did for the Super Sentai of the time.
Yeah, kind
of. Basically, it essentially was the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers era, you know, from the Super Sentai. And it was, for some reason, the Japanese, Chinese, that area had terrible, terrible filmmaking.
And well, I'm not sure. It's I wouldn't.
They got better.
The record is terrible. I mean, I would think it's like, hey, how can we do this with this amount of money? And they did what they could with what they had. And, you know, they're much more, I would think it's much more forgiving. It's like looking at the old science fiction with the cheesy effects and the stuff on strings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
the wire effects of the early 90s, we thought that was the shit because we didn't, you know, to do CG at the time was unheard of. Like, you know, so what they were doing was considered sort of state of the art. Now, I think there's a little bit lost in translation.
Agreed.
You know, in this, I don't think it completely translates. I know I've watched some other foreign films, some foreign action films that are subtitled, and sometimes you're just left scratching your head like, oh, I don't get it. You know, like, what just happened?
Yeah, I mean, especially if they're dubbed. I hate dubbed movies. I'd rather watch in the original language being spoken and subtitled. And on Netflix, the only option available was the dubbed version. And apparently, from what the reviews on Netflix here, it was also a very highly edited version.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not really the true heroic trio, and that's the only one we had access to, really.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if I were to watch the actual subtitled one, and I might find it much more enjoyable. But now I'm just curious now, what the heck did they edit out?
I know, right? Right. Well, I'll throw out there because I know this is not going to be our most highly reviewed film to date, but there is a specific reason why I threw this on here. Because we always talk about female heroines,
mm-hmm.
you know, we always tend to talk about them. And this is one where I remembered from several years back that I had seen, and I remembered thinking, this was interesting. And I saw it again on Netflix not too long ago, and I was like, we need to watch this. And I'm curious mm-hmm. what the boys will say about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because here we have three... You know, you have the three heroines in this movie, all who come from different backgrounds. Well, kind of all from the same background, really, but they all took different paths.
Right. They all end up going their own way.
Right. They all end up going their own way because they started, like, in the same place, but all end up going their own way. And then come together to save Tokyo, you know, whatever. And all, you know, just all this stuff. But at the same time, like... Back in 93, how many female heroines like that did you find, really that were inspiring? And, you know, and this was a well-known franchise. It did go on to spawn at least one more movie, which I have seen, and it was really bad.
Mm. The Executioners?
The second one was nothing compared to this one. Because it wasn't as much action. It was more story and tried to continue the story and stuff. And it was like, oh, too much drama.
It makes me wonder now, though, because one of the things I felt was missing from this, and I didn't know if this was just a cultural thing, the way it was shot, or now I'm thinking maybe they cut it out, was what I felt was missing was, you know, the scenes where they would go back to when the girls were little. And the two girls were being trained by whoever. I felt myself just being like, why are they being trained? What's the deal with them? Like, how much time did they spend together? But were they always, you know? So I didn't understand that relationship. And I also, it could have been just me being completely stupid. Maybe I didn't catch on right away. Maybe it was lost in translation. But I got the impression that the two main ones, the Wonder Woman, Shadow Fox, and I don't know what the other lady's character's name was.
Mercy? But
Ching. Yeah. Because they either the ones that grew up or were trained together.
Yeah.
But it seemed like they didn't recognize each other at all for like most of the movie until the very end. Then they realized who they were.
Right.
Well, they were separated when they were kids.
What sounds like, too, like Ching was brainwashed.
Right.
For lack of a better term. I mean, ultimately, what it sounds like was this emperor guy stole kids as children and then raised them depending upon different things that came to, you know, like whatever qualities they had, they went on to be certain, whether they were enforcers, whether they were spies, whether they were leader worthy. You know, all depended on what they developed as they grew. Because they talked about, you know, like, you know, one of these children that they've been stealing, the babies, like, one of them is going to end up being the new emperor, and others are going to be turned into number nines, which was that psycho guy.
Right.
Like, enforcer dude. Mm-hmm. You know, so it sounded for sure like, you know, he saw potential in whatever that child brought to the table and then trained them. You know, basically brainwashed them into serving him. But somehow, you know, one of them got away as a child and then the other one was raised in that culture.
Right.
You know, or two of them got away as children, it sounds like.
Yeah. What I don't want to jump too far ahead of the game here, but one of the things I kept thinking as I watched our present movie and then came home and watched this, so I watched them sort of back to back. They're almost the same length of movie. Pretty short. By today's terms. This movie felt like it was 3 hours long to me, just because it was like I couldn't get into it. I found some of the things funny. Like, there were a lot of unintentionally, maybe they were intentionally funny, but like the scene with the motorcycle and the motorcycle spinning like a weapon.
Exactly.
I was cracking up during that scene, and the whole weapon with the throwing it over people's heads and cutting their heads off. Yeah. Like that stuff, brilliant. Like, love that. That stuff cracked me up.
And you see their faces, like, well, they're spinning the motorcycle. They're, like, looking at each other, like, whoa. You know, like, it's definitely, like, anime. It's, like, live anime, you know, for lack of a better term.
What this sort of reminds me of, and I've been looking for it. I've never been able to find it anywhere online. Way back around this time, it might have been actually, like, 93, I went to Gen Con in Milwaukee. And one of the booths at Gen Con was selling the Chinese Hong Kong version of Street Fighter. So made with all, you know, Chinese and Hong Kong actors playing all the characters. And it was very similar to this sort of feeling in this movie. And it was hilarious. Because it's one of those things, like, I don't know if they were trying to make it funny or it was just ended up being funny. But me and my friends, we watched the crap, because one of my friends bought like a copy on VHS at that booth. We watched the crap out of that, and I have not been able to find it ever again. I would love to get my hands on it. I would love for us to watch it, because it's I don't know. I don't know, see if it just it holds up, if the humor holds up, or if it's still another, like, looking at these and it feels like a complete train wreck because it just doesn't hold up at all.
Right.
So.
But you do get a lot of live anime feel out of this one. You know, like, if you think of it, like Shadow or Mercy, when Mercy is like coming in trying to be, she's kind of sexualized, of course, because she's in all leather and riding the motorcycle and stuff, and you know, and then she rides the barrel, right? Exactly. You know, like, she's such a sexualized character. You know, all you don't have is the jiggle boobs. You know.
You know what? If you ever get a chance, you should watch. There's an anime called Cutie Honey.
I love Cutie Honey.
It's sort of like very over the top, very misogynistic.
Yeah.
But if they were to turn this hilarious particular character into an actual cartoon, it'd be very close.
Oh, now you're making me want to watch that again.
Yeah. So
you should watch Corpse Princess if you haven't watched it. That's good.
Yeah. See, there were other things. Like I said, I found the motorcycle part was funny. You know, the head chopping bit was funny. Like, what I didn't understand was, like, if number 9 was so gosh darn powerful as he seemed to be, like he was kicking everybody's ass. Yeah. It's like, why didn't he just send that dude out to do everything that he needed done? Because
true. Rather than the girls. Yeah.
Right. Girl.
I guess because he's like the ultimate weapon.
Right.
Maybe he sent the girls out as to infiltrate and steal and do all this kind of stuff and make it look like it was a natural cause of a death or something like that. Whereas number 9's going to show up and he's like the cleaner.
Right.
I kind of got.
And the other part was, I literally said this out loud while I was watching it towards the end there. I was like, did they really just blow up a sewer full of babies? Because, like, they were talking about there's all these kids.
Yes.
And they just blow everything up. And I'm like, wait a second. Aren't all those babies in the sewer? Did they just blow them all up? And then they sort of aside that they all made it out okay. But I'm like, that was my first thought was, holy shit, they just blew up a sewer full of babies.
How did they get them out?
They really only blew up that one section where that guy's throne was.
I guess.
It were just in a completely.
But then the sewer, like, yeah, everything, yeah. And how'd you like the costume design there, though, when the emperor got, you know, molded onto Michelle Yeoh?
That was funny. I kept laughing at the emperor in general because I thought he reminded me of, like, like bad Princess Amidala drag.
Oh, okay.
Star Wars.
I thought it was like bad Peiwei, you know, like or something like that.
Yeah, no, it's yeah. like super bad Princess Amidala fashion
That's
sense.
That's true. That's true. Evil Princess Amidala. Yes.
And again, I thought the skeleton part was pretty funny. It made me laugh watching it. Like, I was like, oh my God, did they really just kind of go there? Like, which is one of the things that was like a recurring theme with this movie was I kept going, are they really going to go there and do that? It's like, okay, here we go.
Yeah. I know. It's like you get that absurd, and then you would get like that tender moment, like where the one baby died.
Right.
Like that was sad. It was just sad. Like a super. It was a super sad moment, actually, in that movie. It was like high paced. They're fighting, and then all of a sudden, it's like
dead baby.
She's dead baby, right? Exactly. It's like that just the whole.
Nothing's a bigger buzzkill than dead babies.
I know. It's like That was awful. But then you have, you know, interesting, you know, I would. So as a whole, I get what you're saying. Like, it doesn't really flow this movie. But I just found it interesting how it's like, I'm the chief, you know, investigator's wife. But he doesn't know I'm a superhero on the side, you know, kind of like, you know, and then.
She always does some super thing, and she always says to the kid that she saved, shh.
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, and then you've got, you know, these other two with kind of these powers and abilities, and, you know, and they're having to come together to save the world kind of thing. It was quite, I mean, it just has this whole interesting girl power. It's like, you know, they're like the martial arts Spice Girls, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. I was actually really shocked because when I posted yesterday, I posted a trailer and sort of like, what the hell am I watching? I was really shocked at the amount of people who were like, oh my God, I love that movie. It's so awesome. Right.
It's a cult movie. If you read reviews on like IMDb and stuff, I couldn't get enough off of Rotten Tomatoes because it was an older movie. But so I don't really have critic reviews on this one. Mm-hmm. It was hard to find anything negative.
Right.
So I went on to look at IMDb to see what people had to say. And of course, the people who took the time to write the reviews are like, you know, in a time of crappy Japanese movies, this is the best, you know, like, wow. You know, like I wouldn't have even gone to that length, even though I enjoy it. You know what I mean? So people definitely were, it's very cultish.
Right.
So I'd be interested in seeing what the executioners had. I don't know if that one would got as many positive reviews, but
well, I did get a lot of that one's great, but the sequel sucks. Don't watch the sequel,
right?
Yeah, I was over at my friend's Phil when we watched this, and well, first off, during the movie, we're like, "What the hell are we watching?" And then he finds out that there's a sequel, The Executioners. And right after we get done, he's like, oh, I've got to check this out. And then we had the same reaction. What the hell are we watching?
Yeah. So that's pretty much that. I mean, there's really not a whole lot else, I don't think.
Right.
You guys. And really, I think the only thing we really got out of this one was what we learned here.
Japanese superhero movies can be really wacky. That's true. Maybe I should have us watch one of these Super Sentai movies. Something.
Yeah, and just so we don't offend anybody, because there might be some Japanese people who are offended, because it's really a Hong Kong movie, which is part of China. So
this would be actually say Chinese superhero movies.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. It was a Hong Kong animation.
So yes. We amend our statement. It's Chinese superhero movies can be really wacky. Not to say that Japanese superhero movies aren't just as wacky.
Oh, they're just as wacky.
We'll see in the future. I know, because I put one on the list.
Alrighty.
So what do I have to say about this? Blink, blink, blink. What did I watch? Wait, there's a sequel? Why did Michelle do this movie? slash cry. Plus side, Retrograde is still worse.
I love me some old kung fu martial arts movies. I spent many hours of my childhood watching what was called Samurai Sunday here. I don't know if that was a national thing, but in Chicago we had Samurai Sunday.
Okay, similar, yeah.
Yeah, so, but something about this just didn't hold up. I mean, maybe if I had seen it back in the day when it was new, it might have been more entertaining, might have grabbed me. But there's just something about the production right now that comes off to me like a bad 80s kung fu softcore porno, especially the music. The music is very softcore porn. So, but I can totally understand why people like this and why it's got a cult following. I totally get it. There are plenty of moments that made me laugh. It's not like it's, I think it's a horrible film. It's just one of those that it's kind of one of those that you're either really into it or you're just kind of not into it. So it's a maybe for me because you might like it. It all depends on if you're into that kind of thing or, you know, what's up with that. So,
yeah, I just had a general, I always wanted, I always remember seeing this movie and whatever other people would think. Of course, it's fantastical, but I thought it was an interesting play on female superheroes and how they would be looked at in that culture. You know, like the wife just happens to be a superhero, you know, kind of or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, where the girlfriend happens to be a superhero. It's a movie where you just have to let go and enjoy the ride, though. It's not one that you're going to really be like, wow, I can follow this perfectly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to let go and watch it.
Mm. Nope.
Now, don't just say it. Get me wrong. This is definitely a girl power movie. I thought our superhero wins were awesome. It's just a bad movie. That's all. Anyways, moving on. Let's add this to our flick chart and see where it ends up. I have a prediction. We'll see how close I get. The Heroic Trio versus The Matrix.
I'm going to watch The Matrix.
Yeah.
Agreed. The Heroic Trio versus The Mummy Returns.
Ooh. Ooh.
Heroic Trio.
I think I'm going to get drunk and watch The Heroic Trio.
Oh. I would say The Mummy Returns. Oh, this is a tricky one. No, actually, for me, it's not. The Heroic Trio versus Batman Forever.
Oh,
the one with the Riddler and...
That is a tricky one.
Can I just get drunk this time and not watch anything?
Oh.
My poor liver.
I'll just say this right. I love Batman Forever. That is a guilty pleasure for
Steven,
me.
Which way are you going on this one?
I agree. Leaning, but there's some awesome dialogue in that movie.
I'm leaning toward Heroic Trio.
God, are you going to make me pick the Heroic Trio? You know what? I don't think the Heroic Trio is an awful movie, so I'm picking it.
There you go.
Heroic Trio versus A Bug's Life.
A Bug's Life.
Yeah, A Bug's Life.
Not my favorite Pixar, but I'll take it.
Not mine either.
It's a good one. It's not a bad one. All right. The Heroic Trio versus Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me. Yeah, baby.
Oh, the original Austin Powers? Is
it the original the second one?
Oh, is it? Oh, Heroic Trio.
I guess I'm going with Austin.
I'm going with Austin, too. The Heroic Trio versus The Strangers.
Ooh.
I'm going to have to say The Heroic Trio.
The Strangers. I love that movie.
Yeah, I'm going to go with The Strangers.
Yeah, I figured you would. Of course, I'm just not a scary movie god. Oh, another good one. The Heroic Trio versus Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Ooh.
I still like Revenge of the Fallen better than... Yeah, I'd still watch that.
Transformers? Okay.
All right, yeah, I guess I'd watch the Transformers.
Same here. The Rogue Trio versus Batman Returns. That's the second one. Penguin and Catwoman. Michael Keaton.
I haven't seen it in so long. I think I would pick Batman.
I'm not a Michael Keaton Batman fan.
Okay.
Heroic Trio.
Okay, Batman Returns wins. I would not see the Heroic Trio over Batman Returns. All right, so Heroic Trio is number 100 on our flick chart, much higher than I thought it would be.
Why are you dissing on my choices, Jeff?
Oh, wait.
I'm not making fun of you.
I just don't like this choice. Okay. Now, let's talk about the present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
Premium Rush, 74% fresh, 70% audience, directed by David Koepp, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Michael Shannon, and Deanna Ramirez.
Okay, before we go any further, I'm gonna disconnect real quick and reconnect because everybody's getting all crazy cyborgy on me.
Okay. Too, right. So go ahead. Yeah, go. I'll do it too after you.
Well, you probably both could.
All right.
There's two of us, and you both sound fine to me.
Okay, but well, it might be coming from you. That's what I was saying.
All right, sounds better so far.
Sounds better. Do I sound okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, better.
You sound okay to me, but that's just me. Okay.
Better so far. Okay, better. Premium Rush. Woohoo!
Premium Rush. Woo-hoo. So,
have you seen my thighs?
It's a fair. You need to get from there to there, and then the guy will. Doesn't want him to get there because he wants the thing in his bag.
Yeah, well, let's just start off by saying that this isn't a very overly complex film. It's pretty straightforward. Although I was introduced to a concept that I had never ever heard of before in this movie, so I have actually learned something from this, which is the whole Hawala money transfer dudes.
The Hawala, which I guess is like a
real thing, and I was kind of like, what is this? Am I supposed to know what this is? Because they were just kind of bantering it back and forth. I mean, I sort of figured it out from what was going on, but I'd never ever heard the term before. So let me just say, I'm in preface of saying I was not looking forward to seeing this. I was kind of mad at Steven.
Yeah, you were.
When he picked this, I was like, oh no, it's gonna make me watch the. All I could think of, did anybody see the movie Quicksilver back in the 80s?
I don't remember.
Which was another bicycle movie. It's about a stockbroker who quit the stock market and became a bike messenger and got involved in.
I haven't seen it for sure. Yeah.
So I was basically like, oh, it's Quicksilver the remake, basically, you know, but. I will say that I did enjoy it, and I enjoyed it on a couple levels. I thought the production design, the way they handled the production and the way they did their transitions and a lot of the way that the story was told, I liked. Mm-hmm. Because the story sort of was a non-linear jumping back and forth between different time periods.
Right.
As well as somebody I noticed put this on the talking points, sort of like the Sherlock Holmes Choose Your Own Adventure.
Yeah. Thing. Right, exactly. Yeah.
It's basically kind of why is he so good at riding a bike through this really busy town, not getting himself killed? Well, he has these moments where it's like, what do I do? And he kind of, from his perspectives, assumes things that happen if he goes one way or the other, and he determines which way he needs to go.
Mm hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, at just that basic level, I mean, I thought the movie was enjoyable. I didn't not like it. I sort of spoiled myself a little bit and read a few reviews before I went in because I kind of wanted to know what I was getting myself into. But a lot of the reviews all said, like, you know, hey, it's a kind of quick, smart, not dumb, fun movie, you know?
It's got a ton of energy.
Oh yeah, it right. just starts going. It never stops, really. You know,
I didn't know. Like you, I didn't really know what to expect. I just had looked at a couple of previews because the movie I had originally thought of for us to do this week got bumped back.
Right.
So I wanted us to do Sinister this week, which was originally scheduled to be out, but it got bumped back to October, which seems more appropriate, to be honest with you. But when it got bumped back, I was like, crap, what's coming out this week? And I was going through some things, and I saw the one you wanted to see, which originally Fuzz was trying to talk me into seeing Hit and Run. And then I realize it's a screwball comedy with Kristen Bell and that kind of thing. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, I don't know if I'm in the mood for that. And number two, Jeff would kick my ass.
Oh, I wouldn't kick your ass. I would just be very angry at you.
Another screwball comedy kind of movie. And I was like, let's see this, because I don't think I've seen anything like this in a while. You know, I don't know. So I gave it that shot. And I just like you, I had really no insight, except for like on Fandango, things were saying, go see it. You know, it wasn't a can't wait for you to go see it, or it wasn't a don't go see. It was definitely like, go. It's worth it. We're seeing.
Right.
And when I saw it in the theater, I kept thinking, actually, this looks pretty good in the theater. You know, I'm actually kind of glad I saw it here, because I felt like I was on one of those 3D rides. Not that I saw it in 3D, because it's not in 3D, but I mean, one of those like movie rides that you go on, like when you're on the coaster and stuff like that, like because you're in the first person perspective of a lot of times with on the bike, you know, or close to it, or if you ever ride the bikes at like the bikes with the monitors on them, like at the gym, you know, and you're going to the park and stuff like that, it kind of had that feel. And so it was kind of interesting, and I did realize that as I was going through this, I'm like, damn, you're on the bike for about 90% of this movie. You really are. Only like about 10% of this movie is actually dialogue off the bike. You know, so you're constantly going. It doesn't stop. So you don't really have time to be bored in this movie. You know?
No, you don't. And that's why I said one of the things that I kept thinking about was the fact that, you know, this movie and the Heroic Trio were both very similar time-wise, and this movie felt like it was like 45 minutes long, and the Heroic Trio felt like it was 3 hours long. But that's just because I was sort of just sitting there and enjoying it. I almost kind of wish that they had made this in 3D. It'd be interesting to see some of those scenes in 3D. It might have made some people nauseous.
I don't know if I needed to see some of... Yeah, it might have made you nauseous, because I don't think I needed to see some of those crashes in 3D.
Yeah, some of the theaters.
Some of the anticipated crashes, which I thought was funny, to be honest with you, where he would do the... I mean, he didn't do the Sherlock Holmes thing too much.
Right.
It would have been too gimmicky. But fortunately, he used it maybe three times in the movie, where you could see where he was trying to make his point about where to go, and you would see him go, okay, he's going off this way and then he hits a baby, or he goes off this way and he hits the truck, or he goes off this way and gets sideswiped, you know, and you watch his body get crushed, or when he knocks the guy off the bike and the guy gets run over, or no, he knocks the guy over and the guy gets run over by the truck.
Oh,
I think the whole you know, the like five people in the audience in my theater were like, oh
yeah, we all went ooh.
Exactly. So, you know, so there were definitely some moments.
Yeah. No, I agree.
You know, there were definitely some fun moments with it.
I really liked how it really did have that energetic pacing to it, and that it did feel, well, to me it felt like an hour and a half, but it just, because it really felt like it kept going and going and didn't have that stopping, but it had so much energy that I could just continue on with it. In fact, by the end of the movie, I was tired. And nothing to do with the fact that I had just eaten lunch before that.
Yeah. I will agree. Yeah, and I will agree with whoever put this in the talking point things with the Asian bodyguards. Holy crap.
Asian bodyguards.
The Asian bodyguards were hot. The one who kept talking to the cop...
Uh-huh.
I was like, where are you?
Yeah. Well, the one that got me was the sort of muscly one that was like the bodyguard of the Huwala dude.
Huwala dude. I was just like, yeah.
Hello. Can we stay here?
He had the mustache. He had the mustache, and yeah, I know what you're talking about. But I really liked. I really that one. I really liked the one that was in the parlor, or in the in the game parlor. Oh my goodness! The one who kept telling him he needed to bring his $40,000. $17,000.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was nice.
So yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah, I just the only you know the real problem I guess in retrospect watching this movie, I had a couple little problems, and it was the way that I think the way that the NYPD was portrayed a little bit. Okay, and I'm not talking about the bad cop. Bad cop's fine. I'm joking more about the bike cop.
Well, you know, yeah. That's also two guys, and then to me, that doesn't necessarily represent the entire NYPD. It's just these are two characters that the characters run into. They're not necessarily best, but hey, they're just kind
of. They did kind of make him out to be the keystone cop of the situation, right. You know.
It was just comedian. He was the comedy relief.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the rest of the cops, like the ones at the lockup, they didn't really make them out to be too great. They were all sort of bumbling, you know, close the door, you know, and it's like the old dude just like, blah, 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 I'm going to cock over here.
They're all trying to, you know, and they're all trying to grab the kid, and he's like out maneuvering them on the bike in a tiny warehouse. Basically, right. Really,
I was waiting for the Benny Hill music to kick in.
Because I'll tell you what I would have done if I was in there. I would have thrown something through the tire.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you know, I would have stabbed something through the tire and watched the kid go bloop. You know,
what I mean? Also got to look at it. You got to also look at it, the fact that their hero needs to get away.
I know, but it's just you know, it was just a little keystone copy for me. You know, but and then the other piece that was a little kind of weird to me was what was this whole aspect of the Hawala and everything? And it's like, I know and I get why they did this. They said that the reason that the young lady was trying to get her son over was because she wrote a commentary piece on Tibet as part of her program that was on the internet, and her government saw it. So her government froze her ability to bring her child over on her student visa.
Right.
Now, she's on a student visa. First of all, let's talk about that. She's on a student visa, which is not permanent residency, but she's going to risk her life and the life of her son and all this stuff to bring him over on a little boat, on a boat, you know, in steerage class or whatever. You know, that was a little weird to me. And I was wondering, like, you know, and at the end we were all like celebrating his freedom and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, is that really good? Because if he gets in the country and they realize he's illegal, they're going to deport him.
Right. It was a little hokey, you know.
Yeah. So it was a little bit like, really? So there was. Those two aspects of it made me think, I'm like, I'm really liking this movie, but as I analyze it, I don't know if I cared for that part, those parts, you know, but then again, I did enjoy the bike riding. It was exciting. And it was, I liked the interesting storylines that developed, and the bad guy was awesome. He was creepy. Yeah,
he was good.
I didn't want his teeth in my face.
He reminded me of Willem Dafoe, kind of.
Yeah,
in a weird sort of way. Like Boondock Saints kind of gone horribly wrong.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That's very true. But he definitely came in like, I mean, he was just a loose cannon. You know, and you just didn't know where he was going to go. You know, and you knew he had just killed somebody, air quote, accidentally. You know, so what's he going to do to make sure that stays covered?
Right.
You know, that was kind of creepy. So you didn't know how far he would go. He was that much of a loose cannon. So they gave a good bad guy.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed him. I thought his performance was pretty good. there was at no time. Well, I mean, again, there's the big spoiler alert. There's the big shocker when you kind of find out he's a cop, you know?
Yeah.
You're kind of like, whoa, okay, things just got serious, you know? But that, I think that the hardest thing for me was sort of trying to get my head wrapped around the whole Hawala concept and why this movie ticket was worth, you know, $50,000 or however much it was supposed to be worth. And I didn't really catch that at all. Other, you know, when he when the cop was first getting explained the deal by the guy in the parlor and said, here, you know, if you get this and bring it to this person, it's worth this much money. You know, so right. That whole concept took me a while to sort of wrap my head around. And then I kind of got it. And I was like, OK, I understand that there's like money changing hands without people
laundering actually kind of situation. Money.
Right. So, but yeah, that was the thing that threw me for the loop the most. And then there was a few parts like the I will agree that the part of the chase through the warehouse was kind of hokey. And I really didn't get the boyfriend's motivate. Like, why is he all of a sudden so motivated to help this girl out? You know what I mean? He did like this complete about face, even though it was her kid. I mean, I would have been like, I'm sorry that your kid's stuck in China, but it's not like he's in like any peril. Like he's going to die if he doesn't come to America, you know?
Right, right. He's safe there.
Right. As far as we know. Right. So I didn't quite buy that. But overall, I mean, besides all that stuff, I still had fun watching the movie, so.
Exactly. Just kind of a fun let go. Well, critically, I'd say that there was an interesting thing. There weren't a whole lot of negatives, I'll tell you that much, which I was kind of surprised. I figured that somebody would have ripped it apart. But on the positive side, as I thought about it, the pace doesn't give you much time to think about the plausibility of it, you know, because it keeps going so much. And I think, like we talked about, it's some of it has been an analysis after, but during the film it was like go, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The writing is thrilling, though realistic in New York traffic. You know, and not that it's exactly Shakespeare, but it is entertaining. And then again, Michael Shannon, bad guy, definitely gave a memorable bad guy. And somebody said maybe one of the best bad guys of the year. I don't know about that, but you know, and it was adrenaline rush. On the negative side of the house, some people were just really kind of mean about the writing and or the storyline, that it, you know, writers should have put on the brakes. Ba-dum-bum. You know, that was a little too cartoonish and unbelievable. You could definitely tell when CGI took over. That was one thing that was kind of annoying, and I would agree with some of that cartoonishness. And it just never comes together because of a lack of a consistent tone. And while interesting, it just gets repetitive. And I, you know, in some places I agree, but they kept doing different perspective shots and showing different parts of New York to keep the bike riding interesting. So you didn't feel like you were constantly doing the same circle. Do you know what I mean?
Just riding up and down Fifth Avenue or down Broadway or all over the place.
They took you in different alleys and took you through Central Park and then took you around here. So they kept breaking it up so you didn't feel like you were seeing the same – you weren't passing the same light pole all the time, which I definitely think would have gotten competitive. But I thought they did a good job with it. I didn't feel uninterested in watching where the bikes were going in this movie, you know?
Right.
Agreed.
So that's that.
So what have we learned from – Premium Rush says you can't be Zen if you're wearing a gold chain. Snorting Ritalin makes taking the bar exam a cakewalk. Brakes are death. The Hawala settles its own problems. The city is not your village. And the bike wants to go fast. I was never really sure exactly what to expect in this movie, but still seemed like it would be at least be somewhat fun. Wow, was it better than I thought it would be? The bike riding gave me a similar feeling to Run, Lola, Run. It was exciting at times.
I can see that.
That guy was just annoying. But that could have been the point. See it at a matinee or wait for DVD.
Yeah, like I said, I went in with really low expectations, but I ended up enjoying it. Is it as smart as everyone's been saying? Production-wise, yeah, I think the way they produced the story and made it happen was pretty smart and sort of unique, even though I do see a connection there to Run Lola Run, obviously, and Sherlock Holmes. But I'm not so sure that the story is all that smart. But it's not bad for a sort of turn your brain off and enjoy the ride kind of flick, you know. It's great for a $5 matinee. Mm-hmm. You know?
I didn't think I'd like it at all, but I have to admit I did wind up really enjoying it. I liked seeing it in the theater for the feeling as though I was watching it in one of those video roller coaster ride things. I think I would have liked that rather than just seeing it on TV, to be honest with you. Just because of the vastness of the screen and all that. I don't know how much I cared for the whole cops are stupid or murderers vibe, but I get how it was part of the plot. So, that's me.
Mm-hmm. Understandable. Moving on into the future.
Hi. Welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
Skyfall. Releasing November 9th, 2012, starring directed by Sam Mendes, starring Daniel Craig, Javier Bardem, Ralph Fiennes, Naomi Harris, and Judi Dench. Bond's loyalty to M is tested as her past comes back to haunt her. As MI6 comes under attack, 007 must track down and destroy the threat, no matter how personal the cost.
Yeah, so saying a whole lot without saying a whole lot, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know how much there is to really talk about in this film. I know there was a ton of news stories over the last couple of years because of MGM's financial problems and production had started and stopped and started and stopped. So we really didn't ever expect to see this film, I think.
Yeah, just weren't sure if it was ever going to get out of the starting block. Just
right. So really my big thing about this is to understand your excitement for this. How big of a Bond fan are you?
I have all of the movies. I have.
You guys are much bigger Bond fans than I am. And it's not that, you know, if a Bond film is on TV, I'll watch it. But if it's, I'm not seeking it out.
Right.
That was just.
That's one of the few, and funny that you should say that, one of the few things I miss about having TV, cable TV. Is the 7 days of 007 that always used to happen TBS. On yeah, so because it always was a chance to watch some of the movies that I may not have, you know, watched a lot of, but I've seen almost every Bond film more than once. There is some exceptions to that. I really didn't like Quantum of Solace. I've only seen that one time. I saw it in the theater and I was really disappointed by it. So I never actually felt the need to go watch it again. I might watch it again before I see Skyfall. Cause I know this, if the production team has stayed at all the same, I know they like to sort of, they've been trying to do some carryovers from movie to movie a little bit. So I'll watch it just to see if there's any cues or anything that continues story arc wise. Yeah, I would say that I'm a pretty big Bond fan. It was always funny because my mom saw I can't remember the name of it. It was some really cheesy spy movie from the 60s that she assumed every James Bond movie was like that, so she never watched any of them and was pretty critical of all of them. No.
Like the parody one from...
It might have been the parody one, for all I know. But she did not like... She thought that that's what all James Bond movies were like, so she was just, you know, she never even bothered to see any of them. I'm curious as to what your first Bond movie was. Mine was For Your Eyes Only with Roger Moore.
I want to say the same, but it could have been Living Daylights for me.
God, that's hard for me to...
No, I really don't know, because I think the first time I saw it was on TBS in the 80s where they were running the old ones. So I think I did see like a Sean Connery one for the first one. But you don't know which one.
Yeah, like, that's really hard. Probably, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is thinking of Your Majesty's Secret Service. But I also remember Thunderball, and I remember... I mean, of course I remember View to a Kill. The 80s ones were my, you know, when I was growing up and stuff. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Duran Duran, anything with Duran Duran in it, I was totally on there.
See, I always remember the music, and I remember as being a little kid and for some reason being totally enamored with the, is that Sheena Easton? For Your Eyes Only?
Yeah.
For Your Eyes Only.
Yep. Yeah, I remember loving that song. Yeah, yeah, you can tell that.
I always remember the name Octopussy, you know, or the man with the golden gun. You know, there's certain things that I can remember, but it's really hard for me to say which one was the first. I remember the scenes from Your Majesty's Secret Service where they were in the snow and they were skiing, you know, and all that stuff. And so I definitely, those are some of the first images I can remember, so that might be the first ones that I remembered seeing, but I was young then.
That seems so funny because that was the George Lazenby one, and a lot of people forget about it or think it's not an official James Bond movie, like never say that again or something. So it just seems weird that that where is where your main headspace
my image comes from.
Yeah.
I see, and then me being the budding car geek, I always remember the Bond vehicle. So I remember thinking that the Lotus Esprit Turbo from For Your Eyes Only was just like the shit. So it's like, yes.
And of course, the 70s, I remember the Thunderball, which was such a ridiculous kind of concept. For the Bond movie. You know, I would think if anything was the redheaded stepchild of the Bond family, it would have been Thunderball.
Right.
But
well, in some sense it was because they remade it as Never Say Never Again. But still, Thunderball's stayed as the official
Bond. Yeah.
Right. So, with all that being said, and taking in this trailer, I noticed people have somebody put down the comparing this to Bourne.
I did, that was me, because of the fact that they talk, at least on the trailer, there seems to be a big hint of they're coming after all the MI6 agents, and then they mention but they're all under deep cover, and it's like, but somebody stole the file, and so it had this very Bourne legacy feel to it where they were killing off all the agents, you know.
Gotcha.
So that's where so it felt like it was Bond with the Bourne twist or something like that, or a merging of the two. So, you know, I was kind of wondering, I'm like, I wonder if they're biting off that a little bit, or if they're trying to set up like an end to MI6 and the series, or, you know, like what are they trying to do? You know, so I was just curious if you guys got that vibe, or was I just overthinking?
Well, I would be really shocked if they were trying to set up the end of MI6. That would be surprising to watch, but it would be interesting if they tried to do it.
Or Bond is the new M.
Yeah, that'd be weird.
I'm like, maybe they're, you know, I don't know.
Right. No, I mean, all I could say is, you know, it's a Bond film, you know.
Okay.
It's one of those things, like, I don't know if they've actively, I think every sort of Bond, when you get a new Bond, they all sort of have their own sort of quirks as far as the way they fight. And of course you've got like a new cinematographers that come in and sort of change, and fight choreography change. I always remember when we saw Casino Royale the first time, just how much more brutal this Bond seemed to be in terms of fighting. He seemed much more the action hero as far as physically, you know, beating the crap out of people. Not that, you know, the other Bonds weren't physical, but he seemed much more of a brawler. And there was a lot of, especially I always remember the parkour scene running, the chase scene in Casino Royale. where he's chasing the guy through the construction site. And it just seemed very, very physical. So I get that from Daniel Craig. And so I can kind of see that sort of comparison with Bourne, how it's a very sort of physical, in-your-face fight. Not completely relying on gadgets. Like, we had some Bonds that relied more on gadgets than anything else.
Pierce Brosnan was probably more the gadget Bond. He was so stiff.
Yeah, he was. I'd like to call him. He was more the gunplay. Like, he was. He was big on weapons, and he was big on weapons and vehicles. For Daniel Craig, the vehicle seems to be much more of a conveyance item to get him from point A to point B.
Right. His feet can do the rest.
Right. So. Yeah. Okay. That's
so I'm not too far off of my at least my thought pattern on that.
No. No, I don't think so. So, okay. Jeff.
All right. So, basically, for me, it's the bottom. It's Bond. There's no reason why I wouldn't go see it. I'm excited for the new Q, by the way.
Yeah, the new Q does look interesting. It's going to be the youngest Q I think we've ever had. So,
yep.
I'm sort of torn. I like Daniel Craig. I've enjoyed him. I love Casino Royale. I thought it was a good Bond film. But Quantum just didn't do anything for me. It was kind of a letdown. So I'm sort of in that sort of cautious mode. Like, I'm hoping for another Casino Royale and not another Quantum of Solace. I am hoping for good things. I've seen almost every Bond film multiple times. So even if this one wasn't already on the list, I know I'd see it eventually.
Okay. And, you know, like I said, I think it comes off a little Bond and Bourne mixed together, but I've never been a super Bond fan, but this one does seem like it'd be one that I'd be interested to see because it's not the standard, you know, like Bond's on a case, Bond got an assignment kind of film.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, sounds like there's going to be a completely different methodology as to how he comes across the situation, you know, coming back from the dead and doing all that kind of stuff. It's not the typical Bond. We have a Moneypenny has you coming in here to do an assignment, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of it's more of a License to Kill sort of thing.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So I think it might be interesting. I might actually like this because it's going to be a different tone. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's it for this week's episode of Sewell Movies. Next week, we'll be taking a look at Noises Off. Also, check it out in the theaters. Lawless with Shia LaBeouf and Gary Oldman.
Ugh.
Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy.
Hate that you're making me see a Shia LaBeouf movie. I know. I'm okay with the Tom Hardy part. But I still have to see Shia LaBeouf.
Ugh. We'll see what it's like. Anyways, in the future, we'll be taking a look at Wreck It Ralph.
I'm going to wreck it. Right, exactly.
There are plenty of ways to contact us. Pop over to our website, colmovies.com. Email us at colmovies@gmail.com. Leave us voicemail at 361-265-8255. That's 361 COL Talk. Also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/colmovies. Facebook.com/colmovies. Google+ at gplus.2/colmovies. Please pop over to iTunes, see if you can find us, and leave us a 5-star review. We'd very much appreciate it. With that, any final thoughts?
Yeah, actually, I do have something this week. I just wanted to give a little shout out to the Enthusiast Cubcast. The guys, John, Chris, and David, let me spend an hour or so on their podcast yesterday talking about giant robots. So it was kind of fun.
Sounds interesting. And they weren't for John.
But we all wish you a happy birthday, and I'm going to wish you a happy birthday, Jeff.
Oh, yay! Happy 30th!
Woo! No, 32nd.
I'm just playing.
32nd yesterday.
I was trying to help you. Happy 32nd, then.
I am proud of my 32 years, because that means now I am older than half my mother's age. So,
all right.
I was half my mother's age 2 days ago. Actually, over 2 days ago, because she had her birthday on the 12th. And then I was left younger, 9 older. Anyways. Where was I? I'm just going to do something. Forgot what it was. Oh, I think I was going to end the show. So for me, for Fuzz, for Steven, take care.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, kid.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.